What contribution do I want to make? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, on this lovely Easter Sunday morning. What contribution do I want to make? Now, that's a good question. It's a very good question. And each of us should consider what contribution we want to make in life. I have known thousands who have gone to gurus all over the world. And they go to visit these gurus and listen to what the guru has to say. And then they look at the guru and they say, "Been there, done that. I've meditated before. I know what I want to do. I'm going to listen to you until you say something that is interesting to me." Now, they don't say that out loud, but they say it in their heart. And saying it in their heart, they are creating themselves an interesting situation. They're creating themselves a non-learning situation. And a non-learning situation is a useless situation. If you go to the music school and you say to the music instructor, "I want to learn to play the piano," the music instructor will say to you, "Very good. We will start you out on lesson one." And you say, "Oh, come on now. I'm 60 years old. I don't want to start on lesson one. I want to start on lesson 8 or 12 or something like that, you know." And so the music instructor says to you, "Hey, wonderful. Here is lesson 8. And so he has you work on lesson 8. And you say, "Well, this doesn't make any sense. This doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Sit. I don't know where these things are. I don't know where the notes are. I don't know where the tremolo is. I don't know what the andante and allegro and all these things mean. I don't know what they mean." And the instructor says, "Oh, you said that you are 60 years old and you are ready to be in the advanced level class because of your age. But I don't know those things." Well then, start at the beginning. Start at the beginning. And when you start at the beginning, then wonderful things happen. When you don't start at the beginning, then you are like an empty shell. You'll remain empty because you have nothing to put into you. Nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense to you. Rex is a wonderful dog, as you realize from time to time as I talk about him. And Rex is 19 weeks old, about. 19 weeks old, that puts him around 5 months. Now, Rex is a teenager. And you know what teenagers are. They know it all. Well, I've been teaching Rex to walk gently with me, to do his duty outside, to do all these basic things that are very important for a dog to do. And Rex thinks he knows better. He will drink and drink and drink and drink water and then come sit in the house. And then when he has to go, he just stands up and goes. I said, "That's not acceptable. Outside. Outside." And so, the moment he drinks water, I make sure he stays outside so that he can go through, because it's in and out. And when he eats his food, I make sure he takes a walk within a couple of minutes after he eats his food, or it's in and out, because that's what puppies are. They're just inking and eating and drinking machines. Yes, and you're staying right here. Mm-hmm. Eating and drinking machines. And as eating and drinking machines, what do? They think that they know best. They think they know best what they're supposed to do. Now, do they? Not yet. They're just little children. They don't know the rules of life yet. They don't know the rules of how to do these things and how to train themselves, so they need to be trained. And as being trained, they are having a good time. And they're good kids. But you treat them as children. And you patiently go over the lesson again and again and again. until they pick up the lesson. This morning, I walked with Rex on our 3-mile path, and as I walked with him, I said, "No." That meant he was pulling on the leash. And then I said, "Yes, yes, yes," when the leash was slack. And then, "No," and then, "Yes," and then, "No," and he got the message. And pretty soon I was just saying, "Yes, yes, yes," as we walked gently around the path, and there was lots of slack on the leash. And he was getting the message. Now, he has a nose that can smell anything, ears that can hear anything, eyes, he sees the birds up on the wire of the telephone post and stuff like that. He knows all these things. I mean, he's very alert and fast. Oh my, he can run so fast. And he can do all these things. But you see, he hasn't learned to be the master of himself. And sometimes he will jump into trouble, and he will jump into a car's way, or he'll jump into something else if he doesn't learn to mind. If he doesn't learn that he's not allowed to cross the road unless we're holding hands, you know? He's not allowed to do these things unless that. And he doesn't get a treat from my pocket because he wants it, because he can smell it there. He has to wait until I'm ready to give it to him. Well, Rex hates me with a passion. Right, boy? He hates me with a passion. Actually, he could eat me up. I want to get in my bed, he jumps in first. I want to make my bed in the morning, and he's eating his food. He comes over and jumps on the bed while I'm trying to make it, even though he's got a bowl full of food, because it's much more fun helping me make the bed than it is to eat the food. But that's the way he is. Now, I understand that, and I don't dislike him for that. I think that's kind of charming that he wants to do that. So I do other things and keep him out of the way while I'm making the bed and stuff like that. But now, that's a dog. And he chose to come to the monastery and be my pet. And I am training him. And if any of the rest of you try to train him, you'll mess him up. Because he's learning the way I'm teaching him. And the way I'm teaching him, he's going to be a fabulous puppy, a fabulous dog. He will be well accepted and well recepted anywhere he goes. Now, here at the monastery, for the last 30 years or 50 years, since 75 at least, we've been having people come here. Before that, I had other types of classes, but before, since 75, we've been having people come to the monastery to learn. And the majority of the people who come to the monastery think that they know it all. They think they know what we're teaching, because what we're teaching is a very laid-back philosophy. We're teaching the philosophy of be yourself and have fun. And so sometimes when you think you're not allowed to be yourself, well, I want to be myself. I want to do my own thing. Well, that's fine. You are perfectly free to walk without your leash as soon as you have learned how to walk on your leash. So, in the monastery here, you're walking on your leash. You're learning to be yourself and have fun, but you're not yet ready to be yourself and have fun until you can be responsible for yourself, until you can know the rules. And once you know the rules, then everything you do is beautiful. But until you know the rules, everything you do is misery. Now, what are the rules? The rules are just the simple campus rules that we have here. But some of you feel that you're above those campus rules. If you open it, close it. If you borrow it, return it. And so forth. They're just a bunch of very simple rules. Now, you say, are those spiritual rules? Oh my, yes. They are the foundation for all of your understanding. And if you have not taken all 13 of those rules and not only memorized them, but made them your habit of life, then you've wasted your time here. Now, that's a very important thing to do. Now, another thing that is important to do is your music teacher says you must begin at level 1 because you have had no previous lessons in music. Or if you have, show me what you've learned, and I will thereby put you at the level that you belong. And so you show me, and I say you belong in level one. But I spent 3 years going to take piano lessons. I spent 3 years when I was a kid doing this here. I should certainly have learned something. Yes, you should have. But as a kid, you didn't pay any attention. You did as your mother told you. You went to your piano lesson. You came home and you dawdled at your practice. You didn't do it well. And after 3 years, you didn't know anything more than when you began. And yet, you want to take credit for having 3 years of music training. And of course, you don't have the talent that goes with it. So stop fighting your teacher. Your teacher says, hey, you don't play any better than a beginning student, so let's pretend you're a beginning student. And you come to the monastery here, and you all have had previous training in various teachers and various schools, and you were just as disrespectful to the teachers in the previous schools as you are to the one in this school. And so you come here and you say, been there, done that, I know that, it's my idea. You cannot tell me what to do, you cannot tell me how to do things, you cannot tell me what I'm supposed to do. And I'll say, okay, then please go somewhere else. If you want to learn the technique we have here at the monastery to teach, then come here. Now, one of the techniques we have at the monastery is a very heinous technique, a very hideous, a very ugly, maddening, difficult technique. Okay? We set before you a table filled with goodies, chocolate cake and chocolate ice cream and beer and wine and schnapps. We set before you all sorts of luscious foods like spaghetti and steak and hamburgers and vegetarian foods and salads. And we set before you all sorts of salad dressings and all sorts of things. And they're just there. And we say, chow down. And so you come to the table as though you had never eaten before. And you take something of everything and perhaps too much of everything. And you can't eat it all. And so you have to throw it away. And I say, okay, no problem. Lunch is coming. You got another choice. So at lunch, you do the same thing. And at dinner, you do the same thing. And for a solid month, you do the same thing. You take more than you can eat, and then you throw it away. And you take things that you know are not good for you. You know that an overabundance of sweets is not good for the system, right? You know that too much salt is not good for the system. You know that many things are not good for the system. And you're getting fatter and fatter and fatter. You say, why am I getting fatter, you know? Because you're not using judgment. Now, you say, well, I'm an adult. I said, fine. You don't act like an adult. You act like a ravished child who's come to the table for the first time and sees all these goodies and has to have it all. But you see, we present this to you. We present this to you with principle, too. The law of cause and effect we present to you on a table of abundance. Speak your word and you will have a perfect body. Speak your word and you have a perfect mind. Speak your word and you'll have a perfect everything about you. And so you start doing it. And you feel very good. But then you say, well, when is it going to happen? Well, it is already done. Now you have to train yourself not to believe in the illusion that you have about yourself and look beyond that illusion to your reality. And that's part of the training we do here too. But you don't want to do that. You say, nobody likes me. Everybody's picking on me. Everybody's giving me a hard time. Everybody's making trouble for me. Well, that's you making trouble for yourself. Every single problem that we have here at the monastery is self-created because we feel sorry for ourselves. And I try to be very gentle to you so that you don't have to feel too sorry for yourself. I try to be very sensitive to you. But you see, like the teacher in school, when you make a failure on a test, the teacher can only mark false for what you have said was true. The teacher can only say, you did not get the answer right. The teacher's not saying, you stupid, stupid, stupid person, you didn't get the answer right. The teacher merely says, hey, study that a little more. You didn't get that answer right. The teacher doesn't say you're stupid, because you're not stupid. You're stupid if you think that the teacher is angry at you because you did something wrong. The teacher's not angry at you because you did do something wrong. The teacher merely wants to train you to do something right. So, when the teacher grades your paper and says, that's wrong, then instead of saying, but it's got to be right, you say, I wonder why it's wrong. And then you look in the textbook and you find, oh, it is right. You see? And I had written false when I should have written true. Okay? You see, what happens when you start doing that? When you start saying, whoops, I should have written the other answer, not that. When you say, I should have done it, you are starting on the path of being in charge of yourself. You're starting on the path of recognizing that you're not stupid, you're just learning. You're just revealing the knowledge that is within you already, and you're letting that channel be open so that that knowledge comes out. Well, to do that, you have to be 100% with the teacher. Because if you're against the teacher, then you're against the learning. And if you're against the learning, no learning takes place. Now, the teacher says, you are ready for first year piano. And you say, but I want eighth year piano. And the teacher says, well, go somewhere else. I teach you eighth year piano and you aren't ready for it because you don't have the fundamentals. Now, when you're with a teacher, like, for instance, Esther, we're learning about the golf carts, to drive the golf carts. Well, now, Esther is a mature person. And I say to Esther, Esther, what do we call these things? What is the brake pedal called? What is the gas pedal called? What are you harmonious with? And so, Esther is driving, and she knows it all. And as she's driving along, she feels very good, and that's what she should feel. And then I say, Esther, put on the brake and stop. And she says, what? And I said, put on the brake and stop. And so then she's starting to look at her feet to figure out where the brake is. And she's driving into a rock on the side of the road, and I say, Esther, stop. And I shout at her, Esther, stop, halt, halt. And she still doesn't do it. It frustrates her. So I put my foot over and press it on the brake and stop. Now, you see, she thinks that I am taking unfair advantage of her by doing this because I am making it stop before the golf cart hits the rock. Now, and so she's not a bad student. She's just a normal student who's been there and done that and think she knows it all. Now, I tell her, drive on the straight and level because you'll be more comfortable there. And so what does she want to do? She wants to start making big turns and start going here and going there. So I say, okay, turn left at that place up ahead. And she looks at the place up ahead, and she's got the gas on, and we're whizzing right past it. I said, I want you to turn left there. And she says, oh. And I said, well, now, turn left at the next place where you can turn left. And so she turns there and does a good job. And she slows down. And I say, now make a wide turn so you can be out like this in the road and easily turn when they're sharp, you know. And so she's learning to do that. Now, she must think that I'm an idiot because I go again and again and again to tell her what to do. And again and again, and with great patience, I tell her what to do. With great patience. And as the weeks go by, all of a sudden, it'll click in her brain, and she'll say, oh, that's what he was saying. Oh, that's what it's supposed to do. But not in the beginning. Because in the beginning, she is too filled with been there, done that, as all of you are. Some of you have been with me 30 years, and when I tell you to put on the brake, you don't do it. When I tell you to put on the brake, you don't do it. It's not that you want to put on the brake, it's that you follow instructions. And when you can follow instructions, then you're okay. Well, unfortunately, I didn't teach all of you how to drive. I only taught a few. And if I had taught you to drive, you would be the most exquisite drivers on the road. Because I would expect the best out of you. Anyone who learns to drive from me is an exquisite driver. And they are an exquisite driver because I jump on every little thing until they master it. And when they've mastered it, then they say, I'm a damn good driver. I did it myself. Not realizing that with a lot of patience, their teacher sat on their back and sat on their back until they did do it themselves. Now, the teacher doesn't need the credit, okay? But the student needs to know they have to give 100% of themselves to the lesson. So, if you want to get anything out of life, give 100% of yourself to the lesson. And you'll find that then, what contribution do I want to make? I want to make the contribution to be the very best. I want to be the top. I want to be the ultimate. And the only way to be the ultimate is to be the ultimate. You have to build a foundation. On a strong foundation, you can go to any goal you want. Ellen took flying lessons, and as she took flying lessons, her instructor would say, do this, do that. And Ellen would freeze or shake, and the instructor would say, relax, cool it, relax. And so she'd cool it and relax, and the minute she relaxed, she did it easily. And then one day, her instructor was as mean and hateful as any instructor could ever be. You know what he did to her? You know what he did to her? He said, Ellen, I'm done with you. You're going alone. So she had to fly the airplane all by herself after she was a little nervous. And so she got in the plane and she flew it. And she said, hey, I could do it. Hey, I'm doing everything right. Hey, I'm taking off right. I'm landing right. She says, wow. But only because her instructor, day after day, after hour, said, do this, do that, do the other thing. Read your instructions. When we were little children in the United States, one of our great joys was to get our driver's license at age 16. And so, from the time we were 9 or 10, we would sit in our parents' automobile, and we would reach the pedals, and we'd push down the brake, we'd push down the clutch, we'd push down the accelerator, we'd learn where the choke was, we'd learn where the steering wheel was, and we'd learn how to turn the steering wheel. And every day we'd come home from school, we'd go out there in the garage, and we'd sit in the car and pretend to drive it. When it came time for us to have our driving lessons from our friends, when it came time to have those driving lessons, we were great. We were great because we were already comfortable. We were just eager to get rolling, get it moving. And so we did that. But occasionally something would happen and we'd hit a stone and under our wheel and it would make the car bounce a little. What do we do? What do we do? You know? And so our friend who was maybe a year older than we would say, it's okay, it's okay. And it's wonderful. I remember I had an Uncle Walter, not an Uncle Walter, a great Uncle Walter. And he came to go deer hunting with my dad one winter. And he left his Packard car in our driveway. The Packard car, like Studebaker car, like Buick. Yeah, it's the name of the car. It's a real classy car. And he left it in our driveway. Well, we'd gotten our driver's licenses and stuff like that, so, you know, we were ready, but we didn't have a car. Well, there it was. And they were gone for 2 weeks. And the car was just sitting there. The streets were slick with ice and snow, you know, and it snowed all the time, so nobody'd know we'd drive in or out of the driveway with the car. And so we'd take that car and drive it. And we never thought of turning the odometer back, but we drove that car. And we went out to our lake cottage, 30 miles away and back, you know, 60 miles. And we added it onto the car, not thinking about it. And we were blessed. God in us certainly did the driving. Because on those icy roads and on those stupid things, but we loved driving so much. We were careful. We weren't flippant. We were proven drivers. And we would come back, and then there we were. And then, fortunately, my dad never said, "Did you take the car?" Fortunately, my uncle never gave us in, you know, because the car was okay. But he knew there were more miles on there. It was his car, and he knew, you know. And we didn't know that he knew, because those are little nuances we weren't aware of. And he got in his, and his car was all clean and nice. We had vacuumed it. We had made it all nice, much nicer than he left it there. And he said to us, "Thank you, kids, for vacuuming my car for me so nice." And we said, "You're welcome," sheepishly, you know. But we loved to drive, so therefore we drove with very caution, very care, very wonder, and it was great. And when you love to do whatever you're doing, if you come to the monastery here, Ellen? Yes, Herb?
Yes, sir.
When you come to the monastery, what is it that you are expected to do in the monastery, Ellen?
To walk my spiritual path.
To follow the program. You're here in the monastery to follow the program. I presume you're walking your spiritual path wherever you are, you know? But you're here to walk the program. Ellen, you go to music school to do what?
For music to learn.
Yes, for music to learning, yeah. Uh-huh. You go to music school to learn music. You go to other schools to learn what they teach. You come to the monastery to learn what it teaches. And what does it teach? Say that, what I just said, and then say what it teaches.
It teaches the rules.
Okay,
well. The rules. It just goes to learn with the regulations of following.
Now, are you following the rules?
Yeah.
And what is one of the rules?
When you open it, close it.
No. One of the rules is we read our lesson 3 times a day.
Yeah.
Or we prepare ourselves. 3 times a day. That's one of the rules. Right. And what's another rule? We follow the program, which is the reading your lesson, and having your time for introspection, your time for meditation, your time for doing uni work. See, these are all things that are part of the rules of the monastery. And if you don't do it, then you're not hurting us. Because we exist whether you're here or not. If there's nobody here, it doesn't matter. But if you don't do your job, if you don't do the work that's assigned to you, and do it 100%, and if you do things that you shouldn't be doing during work time, then you're cheating yourself, and you're cheating the monastery, and you're cheating everybody else. But if during work time you do all the work that you're scheduled to do and you're supposed to do, and during your personal time or during some other time you do all the other things that you might call games, then that's okay. But remember, you're here for one reason, to learn to follow the rules. And in following the rules, making it so yours that it's the natural thing to do. It's just a natural thing to do, to follow the rules. It's a natural thing to do. Now, they have all read the books of the 3 courses and done them well. And then I said, okay, now start reading the first course book over again. And some of them, I know, in their heart said, well, I've read it, and I've done there, I've been there. And then some of them said, hey, okay. And when they started to read the first course over again, after not having read it for a number of years, you know what they found out? They found out that they missed a lot of stuff the first time they read it. There's a lot of things that they weren't ready to receive the first time they read it, that now, all of a sudden, is coming in beautiful and great. What contribution do I want to make to the world? I want to be myself and have fun. I want to be the greatest myself and have fun that you ever saw on the face of the earth. And how do I do that? By learning self-determination, self-dedication, self-diligence, self-discipline. By being untouched, one-pointed, not possessed, not judgmental. All aiming at unconditional love. Now, those are the directions we're going. And if that's the direction you guys want to go, you're in the right place. But if the direction you want to go is in being human and being unhappy and being possessed by the world and being possessed by the table full of goodies, then, hey, you're in the wrong place. Because those temptations are going to get you here. You're wonderful. You're fantastic. I see you living the ideals of the thought for today and having the most wonderful time that you could ever imagine in your life. I love you. I love you. I love you.